Welcome to the Good Life EDU podcast presented by the Nebraska ESU Coordinating Council. I'm your host, Andrew Easton. Thanks for joining us as we discuss the latest in digital learning across Nebraska and around the country. All right, I'd like to welcome everybody back for another episode of the Good Life EDU podcast, and looking forward to learning a little bit more today about the legislative session that just ended. And so I had to ask on my good friend and someone who's very steeped in these conversations, Dr. John Scretta, administrator at ESU 6. And so, John, thank you so much for joining us today for the pod and to give us really a recap of some of the things that took place over the 22 sessions. So welcome to the pod.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. It's great to have the opportunity to be on with you again and have a conversation. And yes, some folks just kind of dabble in the legislative side. Some folks want the full body immersion treatment of just like being saturated with all things legislative. And I love jumping in, man. It's just something that I've become pretty passionate about. So looking forward to our conversation.
Well, me as well, because if we have to play that analogy out, I feel like this year for the first time, I maybe stuck my toe in. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your firsthand account of what that immersive experience has been like for you. And so before we get started, though, for people that don't know you, John, could you give a little bit of your backstory in education and how you came to be involved with the legislative advocacy?
Sure thing. Well, so two questions there. And first off, my background in education, I'm the administrator, as you said, at ESU 6, Educational Service Unit 6 is headquartered in Milford. We are serving 16 public school districts within our service area, and we get to do all the great stuff that our multi-district ESUs focus on, including a lot of professional development, supporting teachers across our area, some great student services that are tailored to meet the needs of students and the schools that request those, and of course, the technology, tech support, and tech infrastructure for all those districts. So I've been doing that 3 years now. Prior to that, I was the superintendent of the Norris School District, which is actually one of the district members of ESU 6. So I had I thought I had a pretty good idea what I was getting into when I went over to the ESU. I've learned a ton, but that experience as a superintendent and prior to that, a district administrator, assistant soup, and before that, high school principal, and started out as a high school English teacher at Northeast High School in Lincoln Public Schools. So been at this a long time and have had increasing involvement on the legislative advocacy side, which I can talk about. So my interest in legislative advocacy stems from an awareness that the policy decisions that are made impact what teachers can do, are allowed to do, are empowered to do in the classroom. They impact and can sometimes dictate a lot of the workflow and demands that are placed on our school administrators. And we want to make sure that first person I heard this phrase from was Bruce Reeker, who works with the Nebraska Farm Bureau in legislative advocacy. He's a lobbyist with them. And Bruce said that in politics, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And the analogy, I think, is particularly apt in that we have, I think, a responsibility to do our earnest best and our due diligence all the time to do outreach to policymakers who are the folks making decisions about statute and how it impacts schools, so that we're involved in helping to shape decisions and influence the process in a way that leads to the best schooling experience possible for Nebraska students.
Well, and in your advocacy, I know that you obviously have the opportunity to speak from a myriad of lenses, say within ESU 6 as an administrator, but I also know too that your affiliation with NERCSA and the representation for our rural schools in our state. So let's shift to that a little bit, I guess, thinking more about telling our stories at ESU's advocacy. I really like, you wear a myriad of hats, John, so it's great to like have someone like you speaking on behalf of so many of us.
Well, thanks, Andrew. And what you're describing really, and some of the organizations that you reference would kind of make up the political landscape of educational advocacy within Nebraska. And I've had the privilege of being involved in a number of different organizations within different roles where I've been able to be a voice for supporting positive education related legislation, and also at times a voice of opposition to try to thwart a bad idea that gets put into a bill. And as I think we're all aware, session after session now, there's an abundance of really bad ideas that could adversely impact what we're able to do educationally and actually get in the way of teachers teaching effectively and students being able to learn at maximum potential. So NERCSA is the Nebraska Rural Community Schools Association. I've been able to cooperatively assist with Jack Moles and others who are involved more directly on the legislative committee of NERCSA. I'm not a member of that, but ESU 6, like many of our ESUs, is a member of NERCSA, along with virtually every rural school district in the state of Nebraska. I'm the secretary and treasurer of STANCE, which is a coalition of mid-sized school districts in Nebraska that stands for Schools Taking Action for Nebraska Children's Education. STANCE has been around almost a decade now and was really formed to be a voice in the middle to try to be an active proponent in educating policymakers about key issues. And I am also a former chair of NCSA. And when I got that level of leadership involvement and had the wonderful opportunity to do that and to serve in that role, working directly with Dr. Mike Delaney, the NCSA executive director, that gave me a chance to really help be at the helm of NCSA for a year, the Nebraska Council of School Administrators, and participate in education coalition conversations that occur on a regular basis, both in and outside of the legislative sessions, to bring these different education proponent groups together to ensure that whenever possible, we're speaking with a unified voice. And so that includes groups like Open Sky Policy Institute, Nebraska Council of School Administrators, Nebraska Rural Community Schools Association, and of course, the Nebraska Association of School Boards, among others. And again, for me, it all comes back to, and like in my current role as an ESU administrator, I'm a co-chair of our legal committee, which is a committee of the Educational Service Unit Coordinating Council. And the Coordinating Council is basically the formal collaborative structure, our means of getting ESU administrators around the table to talk about and work on problems of policy and challenges of practice that we're trying to address to best support school districts across Nebraska. And the legal committee, not surprisingly, then also focuses on legislative matters. And we work with Jason and Kurt Brom, who are two lobbyists who do an additional level of outreach. But then there's a number of us on that committee who are very actively involved in legislative policy discussions and working to make sure that we best represent the interests of Nebraska's educational service units.
I'll be honest, John, even when I asked that question or set you up for that response, I did not realize the breadth to which all these organizations are ones that you're a part of and actively, I'm sure, learning from to shift your perspective around their needs, interests, wants, et cetera. I'm so thankful. You're someone who's out there fighting for good things, but also...
I appreciate that. You know, I think to some extent, Andrew, it's just a function of I've been around a long time. I've been at this for a while, so I've accrued a certain number of experiences. Prior to our discussion today, I was thinking about times I've actually testified at hearing. And I think by this point, I've testified on proposed legislation in front of the education committee pretty routinely, of course, but also in front of the appropriations committee, the revenue committee, the judiciary committee, and the health and human services committee. So again, some of that is just a matter of being interested, paying attention, getting engaged, and then accruing years of experience and roles that have provided me an opportunity to try to be a voice for supporting Nebraska education.
Well, thank you for all of that. And I'm going to ask then, what were some of the key takeaways or themes from this particular session in 22?
Well, there was a lot, and there were some substantive education legislation. There were some really important bills in terms of education that were debated and did not advance. There were also some bills that fortunately came to pass that are very supportive of education and that we can be champions for and herald as a success from the session. But the major takeaways that have been talked about in the media and that have gotten some traction in the news because they're of general public interest include a couple of things that I just want to point out because they impact education in different ways, okay? And one of those is Bill LB 873 was a major income and property tax reduction bill that became law. It ended up being almost unanimously supported in the legislature and was passed by the governor to great acclaim from the governor's office for what he believes constitutes a fairly substantial change in tax policy in Nebraska and makes Nebraska a more tax-friendly state. The challenge with that has been pointed out by Open Sky Policy Institute and is even very evident in some of the legislative calculations from the LFO, the Legislative Fiscal Office, are that the projections of the impact that reducing income tax for top earners in the manner in which it does and making permanent a range of significant property tax credits will likely reduce the revenue available at the state level in the out years here, so several years out, by possibly up to $1 billion annually. And if you think about that to give you a reference point, the potentially negative impact of that on funding public goods and services, okay, like healthcare, public safety, and of course, our baby, education. If you just look at education, essentially the amount that the state puts in terms of state tax revenue into K-12 education through TEOSA and state aid funding is about $1 billion a year. So to take that and to just kind of reduce state funding available by that substantial of amount is potentially very concerning. And so those concerns, again, have been raised by folks who know a lot more about tax systems and structure than I do as an educator. But organizations like Open Sky Policy Institute, it's important for us to kind of pay attention to their warning signs and the cautionary flags that they kind of raised about this. And we'll want to keep a watchful eye on what the impact is on the revenue available. That's one big thing from last session that is, again, it's not specifically about education. It doesn't denote education anywhere in the bill, but all of us who are in education at a systems level understand that it could have a big impact on education down the road, out on the horizon a few years. Another one that I wanted to mention is that, and I want to mention it because it attracted so much attention publicly, were the ARP funds appropriations, the American Rescue Plan, the COVID relief dollars, a really massive and basically unprecedented in our lifetimes influx of federal funds to support states' economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's really important because the total cumulative dollar signs on the requests exceeded the, you know, $1 billion or so that they had to disperse and make decisions about how they were going to spend. And that money, again, went to support a wide variety of things, some of which impacted education, but not a lot of it. In fact, in the education K-12 realm specifically, schools have continued to look to the direct allocations that they received in ARP and ESSER money, and also to the Nebraska Department of Education. And they have a certain holdback provision where they had some additional rescue or relief dollars that they get to appropriate to different causes. And they've allocated some of that to a wide variety of things, including addressing pipeline issues and educator workforce, and also focusing on mental health provisions in schools. So those are some of the big things that happen in the legislature that were major legislation that went through. There's some other things that emerged as themes of the latest legislative session that I want to point out, though, that I think might be worth noting. And one of those would be that it seems like the tone of rhetoric in our unicameral is becoming more divisive. There's more accusatory and condemning language used by senators. Frequently, what we saw over the last session directed at one another. And so floor debates were often very acrimonious, fairly negative. And that is concerning simply because it reflects a lack of decorum and diplomacy that would make it, I think, this is just my opinion, of course, I think it would make it a better environment in which to substantively debate issues that matter if people could set aside a predisposition that's negative about other people in the room and set aside judgment about a policy issue and allow for a really good, open, and meaningful exchange to happen. And so I wanted to point that out because I'm not quite sure what that is a reflection of, but it certainly seems like there wasn't the level of fellowship and camaraderie among some in the unicameral that I think historically has been a characteristic of the Nebraska unicameral.
That is disheartening to hear. And I do feel that to some degree, and again, just speaking from personal experience, right? The discourse in the social conversations that I'm able to have, sometimes people are more interested in sharing their opinions than listening and arriving at any sort of, it does make it tough to.
Yeah. So one of the challenges that comes out of that and something that we're seeing in the unicameral as well is there seem to be more polarization where you have people in a fixed position that is either hard right or far left, and there's not as much room in the middle where people are gathering, and there are fewer centrist senators. And so one of the things that has been talked about quite a bit, and Don Walton, the columnist, the political columnist for the Journal Star, has pointed this out repeatedly, but it's been talked about in education circles as well. Some moderate Republican senators like Senator Williams, Senator Stinner, Senator Coulterman, this was their last term. They're done. And there's concern that absent those figures who helped to forge a middle path and reach good compromise solutions on a wide variety of policy issues, we could face more challenging times ahead in terms of a real need to try to bring people together to forge common sense consensus decisions on things rather than landing on solutions that are too extreme one way or the other.
Being in those positions has to be incredibly challenging because you represent a group of people. So then when you get in that position, to what degree are you beholden to those ideals that you ran on when the opportunity arises for you to try to reach a compromise and the expectation starts to become, you're not allowed to be anything other than what we signed up for. is that an influencing factor in this? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is. And the great thing about the unicameral structure and the only one of its kind, it's so fantastic because rather than having a House and Senate, both with different channels going and that much more complexity, you have, as Dr. Delaney refers to them, the Divine 49. They're all there, they're together. So we still have a better shot at being able to engage and have great policy discussions. And in name anyway, the unicameral in Nebraska is nonpartisan. Okay, it's not about the R's and D's. Now, folks know an alignment happens, and we understand that. But at least in name and thereby and historically in principle, the legislature has been nonpartisan. And that's something that we can all celebrate in Nebraska, I think, is that independence that characterizes our state.
Well, it's really great to learn more about all these things. And I'm curious to know if there's any key legislation that reference ESUs specifically. And so obviously this is our podcast, right? From the ESUCC.
Yeah.
And so speaking to our network, what should our colleagues know about?
Well, there's some really significant stuff that was passed into law that will impact ESUs, some of which mentions ESUs specifically. And the first one that I want to note is LB 852. LB 852 was sponsored by Senator Day, proposed it. Senator Walz identified it as her personal legislative priority. That bill requires a behavioral health point of contact for school districts. And in an amendment that was brought late and was a very wise and friendly amendment to the bill, it was made sure that schools have the ability to, when appropriate, identify an ESU personnel member as that behavioral health point of contact. Now, the importance of establishing a behavioral health point of contact within schools, it seems like a small thing, and it is. This is a very doable thing. Through the law, DHHS and NDE will cooperatively establish a directory and registry of who these designees are, the designated points of contact for behavioral health. And the purpose in that is to better help coordinate the very, very important mental and behavioral health services that schools either can provide and are working to provide, or to refer them to external service providers that are known by the school to be able to provide those services to students and families. That's a really key step forward in terms of coordinating services across Nebraska in what we've seen since the pandemic and have all realized now is just a vitally important area, and that's providing assurances for the mental health and wellness of our students, our staff, and our families in our communities. So that's a big one. And as you well know, we have a number of folks who are LMHPs and our ESUs who serve in schools directly. And it's folks like that, or in some cases, school psychs, who might be designated as the point of contact for behavioral health within a particular school. So that's one, and that's LB 852. There's a couple others that I want to mention. I will start with LB 1112. LB 1112 actually encountered a really significant amount of resistance from schools and was widely opposed, in particular by rural schools, but not limited to them. And NERCSA made a pretty last-ditch heroic effort to try to rally opposition to stop this bill when it was already on select file and, in fact, had already advanced to final reading. And that effort to stop the bill's passage fell short. And the bill is LB 1112, and it's the Computer Science and Technology Education Act. And the reason that groups like NERCSA and the Nebraska Association of School Boards oppose that bill is not because we're against computer science and technology. We're huge fans of it. It's just that the way that the bill is written and now has become law, which will take effect here in a few years when schools have to implement this, is that it now adds a single specific course requirement of 5 credits at the high school level in the area of computer science and technology as a graduation requirement for every Nebraska student. The issue and the pushback from that schools brought up logically is that that's an unfunded mandate, and that's also relinquishing local control. It's the unicameral getting into the business of adopting and making curriculum decisions for schools across Nebraska, which has a long and revered history of local control in schools, okay? So the thing about 1112, though, that I wanna note is that the way that the bill was written, that course can be delivered asynchronously. It can be integrated into some existing coursework. It can be built out as a series of online modules, or it can be delivered in a traditional classroom format. And it states that it's to be done in a way that meets the needs of each student. The reason I mention that is I think we need to embrace that then through ESUs as an opportunity for us, because this is what we do in ESUs is we're the puzzle solvers. We are the folks who try to figure out the turnkey solution to best support schools. And this is an example of something that, to be perfectly honest, schools didn't want. And a number of them were saying, we don't need it because we're already teaching this at this level or in this way. But now they have an additional requirement. So I think it behooves ESUs to figure out how can we make the Computer Science and Technology Act least burdensome to our school districts by being a good supportive partner to them in implementing this law.
For what little I've dipped my toe in these conversations, John, this is what I'm somewhat familiar with, in that with our distance learning courses that we're able to provide through our InVis system, I am curious to see if we're able to then deliver courses in computer science where needed through something like that. So that would be one example of the, as you said, there could be asynchronous, there could be in-person, but maybe making this an opportunity to where there doesn't have to be a new hire in a district when you're looking to provide one or two courses, could connect you with a teacher that's remote, but a classroom full of two or 20, you know, students in person to gain those computer science credits. A quick question for you, if you know the details of this enough to respond to it, but it goes into effect in 2026. So does that mean then that if I am a senior in 2026, I will need to have accrued those 5 credit hours over the 3 years prior, plus that year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know whether the bill contains language which stipulates that. And if it does not, the bill likely contains, and this is pretty common in education-related legislation, the bill would likely contain language that refers to rulemaking and adoption as being under the purview of the Nebraska Department of Education to figure out the particulars around that. And so, again, that's pretty common, so that the bill itself, and I'm speaking generally here, would not have to quite get down into the weeds as much as a regulatory provision from a Department of Education would. So that may be how that's handled, but that's a great question. There were a couple other bills that were proposed and debated this last session that did not go anywhere. And I want to remind folks of the adage that sometimes the best offense is a good defense, and stopping bad legislation from getting across the finish line is one of the things that we all need to be willing to work at doing. And I'll mention a couple of those. LB 1143 and LB 1146 were bills that specifically pointed at ESUs, because we've had a couple ESUs in our state, ESU 2, headquartered in Fremont, and ESU 5, headquartered in Beatrice, have, at the request of member school districts, formed an interlocal to help the member school district with issuance of bonds via the interlocal, giving them some bonding authority in order for those school districts to complete needed and necessary building projects. And because that interlocal structure did not require a vote of the people constituting the school district that would impact, those projects created some resistance then from some folks. And as a result, I believe it was Senator Friesen in one committee and Senator Linehan in the Education Committee had brought forward LB 1143 and LB 1146, which would have eliminated the interlocal bond issuing authority that was utilized to create those projects for those school districts. The fact that those did not advance, I just want to note that that's significant in that it allows the ESU then to continue to try to be a supportive partner in all the ways possible that a school district might reach out to. You know, whatever people think or whatever their opinion is about a particular a building project, having the means to utilize to be able to do some things like that in order to support schools and students is really a part of what we're about as educational service units. So I wanted to mention those. I want to also note a bill that was sponsored by Senator Pauls who was a retired Millard school principal and served from that area. That was his legislative district, LB 1034, mentioned ESUs in a really significant way. And that bill did not go forward. Senator Paul's just passed away yesterday. So we express our condolences to Senator Paul's family. And LB 1034 was one of the bills that Senator Paul's proposed in this last session. LB 1034 would have broadened the provisions by which the Nebraska Department of Education can identify priority schools. And it would increase that number up to, I can't remember if it was 10 or 12 within a year. But what it would allow the department to be able to do then would be better target schools that have been identified as lower performing in terms of a student achievement profile or index of student achievement results and identify them as priority schools. But the idea that Senator Paul's office had was that if you were an ESU that was serving an identified priority school, a team of six identified personnel from that ESU would be assigned as an intervention team to assist and support the priority school. Now, of course, we have priority schools in Nebraska already, and ESUs work to support them. The thing about the mechanics of the bill that made it something that was not tenable for ESUs, even though we are conceptually supportive of the idea of ESUs working to directly provide support and consultative expertise to school districts to help them improve student achievement. I mean, of course, we're supportive of that. But the idea in the bill, as it was articulated, was that you would have a team of six and they're assigned there. Well, we don't have that personnel and we don't have that capacity in virtually any of our ESUs to marshal a group of six folks and assign them directly as an intervention team to a school. But it was an example of, I think, a friendly gesture to ESUs in terms of recognizing that a central part of what we do is support improved student achievement by helping teachers. So I wanted to mention LB 1034. I also want to note that the signature bill that came through the Education Committee last session was LB 1218. And LB 1218 focuses on educator certification and loan forgiveness provisions. And the certification piece was not as broad in impact or scope as it was initially written. The initial means by which LB 1218 was formulated would have allowed for a lot more flexibility around administering Praxis as a basic skills exam. Praxis 1 is the basic skills one. And currently, that has been a requirement to pass Praxis 1 in order to gain admission to an approved and accredited educator prep program in the state of Nebraska. And there's been a lot of debate over the last several years about whether we need to retain that or alter it in some way. It looks like, based upon the adopted language that passed through to law, there may be some means that we have a little more wiggle room than just Praxis 1 as an exam now, but it does not overtly eliminate Praxis from the certification component at this point. The other major provision in LB 1218 that's a big celebration point, though, is it does add an additional $5 million a year to educator loan forgiveness in Nebraska. And that of course, is a tool that's designed to incentivize folks who are accruing student loan debt when they're going through an undergraduate program to be able to, through an application process, apply for up to $5,000 a year and have that applied for loan forgiveness. And that's a big tool for helping young people galvanize their interest in pursuing a career in education to know that there's more money out there to forgive student loans. And it's also a retention tool in that a lot of folks who enter the teaching profession and leave within their first 3 years leave because there is some of that student loan debt hanging over their heads. And as an entry-level teacher on the salary schedule, you're not at a good spot to be able to meet all the financial demands that you have. And so this bill, 1218, that was passed into law, is a really helpful gesture to providing some support for loan forgiveness for Nebraska's teachers.
Wow, so many different topics and so many conversations that go into, and I know you and I spoke informally at one point in time about how these things can kind of pivot and shift and include new pieces from previous bills, right? Course of time.
Well, 1218 is a good example. So Andrew, 1218 initially didn't have much in terms of anything in terms of educator loan forgiveness. It had a $1,000 stipend upon eligibility provision upon successful completion of student teaching for loan forgiveness. And then it had the certification piece as its big part to provide more flexibility than what we have currently with the Praxis Basic Skills Test. Well, what ended up happening was LB 945, which was a bill actually proposed by Senator Linehan for educator loan forgiveness, got woven into 1218. And that was a process of great collaboration on our education committee and the leadership, of course, of Senator Walz as the chair and Senator Linehan for bringing that legislation forward. All good things there. So I think that it's really important for us sometimes when we talk about the political milieu in Nebraska and nationally, we have a tendency to go all gloom and doom. And it's not all gloom and doom, you know, there are some wins. And so the previously referenced LB 852 to establish a behavioral health point of contact is a celebration point for coordinating mental and behavioral health services in Nebraska schools. LB 1218 puts more money in the pot to support educator loan forgiveness for Nebraska teachers. These are wins. They deserve to be celebrated, and we should uplift the senators and thank the legislature for passing them.
So it sounds like, yeah, number of wins, a couple points of concern, but things that we can work through and try to support. And now with session over, what comes next? Like, what are some things that getting a chance to look forward to in terms of your advocacy?
Okay. You know, you hear this about elite athletes, of which you are, Andrew Easton, you stud. Me, leisure runner, okay? But I've heard the phrase, there is no off season, right? Okay. It's like train every day, man. Day by day, get a little bit better, right? And for the legislature, the way it works is, okay, the session's over. Well, the session's over, but that doesn't mean we should be sleeping on the legislature, okay? Because now they go into interim session, and which is the period of time before the next formal legislative session commences. And during the interim session, studies happen. And what happens when senators start studying topics, Andrew? They come up with ideas, okay? When they study, they ideate, okay? And that leads to legislation the next session, okay? And that's good. That's good. Because some of those interim studies give us an opportunity to weigh in on the conversation, unsolicited or invited, okay? Sometimes you got to knock on the door. Sometimes you got to send the email unasked, make the phone call, just try to get a foot in the door. But sometimes you're invited, you know, to participate. And there's some really good stuff that's being studied in the interim study period here. And one of those that I want to mention is LR 374, which is sponsored by Senator Walz. And that is a tip of the hat to the great effort that happened last session with LB 890 and 891. Those were bills that would have brought about a significant reform in the manner in which Nebraska funds its public schools. Right now, we have a pretty heavy over-reliance on property tax-based revenue to do that. And while those bills did not come to passage, and only one of them actually got out of committee, the purpose of the interim study is to kind of capitalize on the learnings from that and to bring a group together that will be the State and Local School Aid Committee to conduct an in-depth study of balancing state and local financing of our schools. That's a big lift, of course, But getting the right people around the table to participate in that study is a really exciting prospect. And I'm glad that they're, you know, they've summoned the energy to take a look at that again. There's a couple others that are.
Before we get to the others too, can I put two pieces of information I learned over the course of today's pod together then? That piece would be imperative if there's going to be $1 billion taken out of a future budget? Question mark?
Yeah, it's going to be extremely important to consider revenue sources and revenue streams when we look at the altered landscape of tax system and structure in Nebraska as a result of LB 873. So absolutely right. Yep. So I'll mention just two other interim studies that may be of interest to ESU folks specifically, but also just educators generally. One of those is sponsored by McDonald, and it's in the Health and Human Services Committee. That's LR 397. LR is the interim study. The purpose of that resolution is an interim study on needs, workforce, and funding streams for mental health care in Nebraska. Now, that's not specific to education, but obviously would be inclusive of education and mental health services. And so that'll be one that we want to pay attention to and we could learn some things from. And then there's LR 401, which is a resolution to propose an interim study reviewing the administration of the Nebraska Broadband Bridge Act. And broadband, rural internet connectivity, huge issue in education, something we really came to terms with during the pandemic. And when we think about Nebraska's ESUs and the incredibly important infrastructure tech work that we do, that's something that may be of more than passing interest to us as well. So that's some of what's coming up and that we can look forward to. And of course, we're in an election cycle. And so groups like Nebraska Association of School Boards, Nebraska Council of School Administrators, and our own ESUCC are making sure that we're trying to get to know folks who are running for offices where the seat's vacated due to term limits. And so we know we're going to have a new senator in there. So we want to make sure we're getting out there and we're connecting, we're getting folks at the table. And so, for instance, at ESU 6 in our legislative district, Senator Coulterman is term limited out. And so we've got two folks who are candidates for that chair, that seat in the legislature, Dr. Hadavi out of York and Jana Hughes out of the Seward area. And both of them, great folks who are supportive of education. And we have just made sure that we invited them to come to the table, talk to our superintendents, get to know our school districts a bit, and develop an understanding of what an educational service unit does and why we are so integral to education in Nebraska.
Yeah, I think you beat me to the punchline there, John, as far as I was going to ask you what the call to action might be for those listening in. So it sounds like for ESU personnel, that would be.
Here's a call to action phrased as a question. Do you know who's running in your legislative districts? Who's on the ballot? And what do you know about their education policy knowledge and their education policy perspective? If you start with those basic questions, that can inform your next subsequent actions logically. And that's a really good place to start because all politics are local. I also want to mention one other thing, though, Andrew, that I think is really important, which is basically it's something along these lines. I'm going to paraphrase it. And it's that the salvation of the state is in the watchfulness of the citizen. And what that translates to is vigilance and awareness. And an even easier way to say that is, for God's sake, pay attention, right? and it's challenging because we're in an information heavy environment and there's stuff coming at us all the time from a lot of different streams and platforms, but we owe it to ourselves and it is incumbent on us to work hard to ensure that the interests of educational service units are being served by the folks who are serving us as our elected officials. And sometimes we get that backwards. They're our elected officials, as in the citizens and constituents of Nebraska put them in office. So let's make sure we hold them accountable to being supportive of the great, powerful impact that ESUs have in Nebraska's public education system.
Well, I think that that point really lands well when we're sharing it on a podcast hopefully we're getting an opportunity to educate those who might find it tough otherwise through the noise that's out there. And so, John, I am so grateful for you taking the time today to share your insights, the learning, obviously your ongoing advocacy in this space in education. It's really terrific to know that there are people out there like yourself in those spaces. And thanks for taking some time to help all of us be a little bit more effective in our support of our collective education community.
Thanks so much, Andrew. I really appreciate it. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to engage in a discussion about something that I'm very passionate about and that we sincerely believe has a big impact on what we do and what we get to do going forward.